And we welcome back to the show our good friend from CBS Sports, Dan Dierdorf. He will be on the call with Greg Gumbel for Sunday's game against the Cowboys. Dan, how you doing?
I am fine, Vic. How about you?
Outstanding. Well, you've gotten a chance to see this Browns team once in person when they played the Giants, and you're getting to see them now against another NFC East team. What do you make of the Browns at 2-7?
Well, that, you know, it's a number of things. But, you know, first and foremost, at the risk of just falling into, you know, that old cliche, they're the best 2-7 football team on the planet. And I know that that's a little consolation because being 2-7 is really all that matters. But they're going to rain on a few parades down the stretch. I just have a hard time envisioning the Browns playing out the rest of the season like they're everybody's homecoming date. I don't see that. I think they're physically and mentally tougher than that. And if Dallas overlooks Cleveland in any way, that could be a huge mistake for them.
Yeah, they've definitely played teams tough. That's been their signature this season, but it's just moral victories, like you said, and those don't count in the standings. That said, Dan, can you see the bye that they come off of entering this game as maybe being a good thing mentally because they can come into it with a refreshed sense of, okay, they know what their record is, but you get sort of that renewed sense of starting anew in the second half of the season?
Oh, absolutely, and the bye is always a good chance for the coaches to do some self assessment in terms of how they're handling things. It's a good opportunity for the players to kind of refresh themselves both physically and mentally, and especially with a young team that's still trying to find its way. It's some extra practices to, you know, work on some of the things that Shermer and his staff are trying to instill in his team. So, yeah, no, I think the bye came at a pretty good time.
Going right to your bailiwick, how impressed are you with the rookie right tackle, Mitchell Schwartz, making nine starts, about to make his 10th start for the Browns, essentially holding his own because no one's really talking about him? And as I recall you telling me years ago as an offensive lineman, that's the best compliment.
Well, really. And, again, you're right. If you can make it through a game, it's not like people are going out of your way to praise you. unfortunately, it's all about you do something wrong, and then all of a sudden you're the center of attention. But, you know, and it's not easy. It can't be all that easy in the one regard, playing opposite a guy like Joe Thomas. But what a wonderful opportunity for a guy like Schwartz to learn how to be a professional. What could be better than working around a guy like Joe? So, no, I like the kid. He's got good size, good range. He's really suited for the right tackle position. And, no, there's a lot to like there. And in this day and age where, you know, you take a look at some teams, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are a prime example. They have struggled on the offensive line.
Right.
And it can drag down not just your whole offense. If you struggle on the offensive line, it can drag down your whole team. And I think that having a pair of bookend tackles going to bode well for the Brownies for the next – well, I mean, look at Thomas. I mean, he could play at this level for another 6 or 7 years.
And I bring up Schwartz because of the challenge that both Mitchell and – Joe Thomas face in the form of DeMarcus Ware,
right,
and Anthony Spencer, those guys coming off the edge in that pass rush. How do you see them holding up to that challenge, especially on the road?
Well, it's going to start with identification, figuring out which of these guys is coming and coming from where. Now, it does help the fact, I think, that the Browns play the Ravens and the Steelers, a couple of teams that use similar type defensive styles that Rob Ryan uses. You know, it's a 3-4 defense, but again, in nickel situations, there's a lot of milling around. So I think the Browns will be aided by the fact that they're not going to be, you know, completely surprised by the style of defense that the Cowboys employ. Now, having said that, once you identify who you block, you got to block them. And DeMarcus Ware, You know, he's one of those guys, when you watch him rush the quarterback, you realize that he's making it up as he goes along. I think 95% of the pass rushers in this league before the snap of the ball make up their mind what move they're going to put on the guy in front of them. And the great ones, they change in midstream when they see what that offensive guard or tackle is giving them. If the guy's too high, they'll bull rush him. If the guy's too low, they'll jerk him. If the guy's a little off balance, they'll slap him. That's what a guy like DeMarcus Ware does. I look at DeMarcus Ware, and I guess it's my age, but I just see Charles Haley over and over again.
No, that's a great, great comparison. Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Of course, Dan and Greg Gumbel will be on the call of Sunday's game between the Browns and the Cowboys. The other story of this matchup, Browns offense against Cowboys defense, is the running game of the Browns. Trent Richardson, back-to-back 100-yard games, doing so with sore ribs and facing a defense, Dan, that you know is beat up a little bit in that front seven. They don't have their best player, perhaps overall, in Sean Lee. How do you see it? It looked to me like Philly could have run even more effectively on them had they chosen to do so with LeSean McCoy. Do you see a big day for a third big game in a row for Richardson?
Well, I just don't see where the Browns have any choice but to keep feeding Richardson the football. I just think that that's you've got to build your offense around the run game when you've got a guy like Richardson and you've got a rookie quarterback. The one thing that shocked me getting ready for this game is I was really surprised, and I know it's because maybe the losing record and you fall behind and all this, but I looked at Tony Romo's stats, and I went, wow, he has thrown the football 344 times. That's a lot of attempts this time of this. And then I look at Whedon. Whedon has eight fewer attempts than Tony Romo.
Yeah.
You know, that can't make the Browns coaching staff happy that they've been forced to put the ball in Whedon's hand that many times. So, yes, the second half of the season, would they love to pound Trent Richardson in there over and over? I'm sure they would. And I agree with you. I think the McCoy could have done some more damage to that Cowboys defense if they'd have kept feeding it to him. Sometimes you got to keep feeding him the ball, even if you're not having great success, because that success could come in the third and fourth quarter.
And there's a remarkable, I think, contradiction when we look at some numbers here, because you bring up Brandon Whedon and how often he's thrown, and what goes along with throwing that much is the fact that as a rookie, he's now thrown 12 interceptions, which stands out. But here's a number that contradicts that. The Browns are plus one in the turnover ratio, and the Cowboys are minus 11.
Yeah, it's well, first of all, I'm trying to remember the last time I did a football game in the National Football League where both quarterbacks have thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. That's not the way you get to keep your job
no.
as a quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, Whedon and Romo both, Romo's got 12 touchdowns but 13 interceptions.
Right.
And, of course, Whedon's, it's 9 and 12. It's you don't see that stat every day. And you're right. It is really unusual to see a team with a losing record that is in positive numbers in the turnover differential. It is very unusual. It's a compliment to the Browns because it shows some discipline in how they take care of the football.
Absolutely does, and their opportunism on the other side of it, which is what I want to get to now, because this will be the first game that they have both Phil Taylor and Ataba Rubin together as tackles. Ataba coming back from that calf injury. Phil Taylor made his season debut after his offseason pectoral injury a couple of weeks ago against the Ravens. And it looked to me, number one, and I'd like your thoughts in studying the tape, it looked to me like Phil Taylor is a better player overall than he was as a rookie. Just in that one game, you can see it. And how exciting it would be to have the two of them healthy and together, on top of having the two rookies, John Hughes and Billy Winn, in the rotation at tackle.
No, you're right. It looks to be a pretty bright future on the defensive line for the Browns. And I didn't see Taylor play that much last year when he was a rookie, but he's got everything you're looking for in the middle. He's good feet. I like his hands. He does a nice job keeping people away from him, away from his legs. No, there's a lot to like there. And again, you know, this is a this is one of the battles within the battle that the could favor the Browns. The Cowboys have one pretty good player on their offensive line, Tyron Smith, their left tackle. Yep. He's got a chance to really be a good one. Everybody else on that offensive line is no better than okay.
Mm. And that's a team, too, that, you know, can't really consistently run the football effectively. It has to, and I know they've had injury at that position. That's been part of the problem, DeMarco Murray being hurt, but
right.
And Lawrence Vickers, the fullback. But I think as I look at it, Dan, they're probably going to do what the Cowboys do, try to get the ball from Romo into the hands of those receivers, Dez Bryant and Miles Austin, as much as possible, and, of course, Jason Witten.
Well, yeah, Jason Witten is an extraordinary football player. You didn't need me to drop that bomb on you. I'm sure any NFL fan figured that out a long time ago. I just love the guy. I love watching him play. The way he goes about it, he is the consummate professional football player. He just does everything the right way. I'll tell you one thing that sticks out to me about the Dallas Cowboys, and if I was a member of the Browns, that I would take I'd pay close attention to this. I played my entire career for the old St. Louis Cardinals, and we were in the NFC East,
right?
Which means that we were playing the Dallas Cowboys twice a year my entire career. Going to Dallas and trying to win a football game down there was like trying to win the lottery. Now, granted, you know, we were trying to beat Roger Staubach and Tony Dorsett, but what a home field advantage the Cowboys had in Dallas. And it is really just shocking to me that since that new stadium opened in Arlington in 2009, the Cowboys are 14-13.
Right.
And since 2010, they're 8-11 at home. So, you know, that's a stat that the Browns should look at and go, hey, you want to know something? This is real. The Browns should have some confidence.
Yeah, I would think so. And it's funny, and I don't know if you buy this, but you heard Troy Aikman. I'm not sure if he was necessarily criticizing or observing, but he said the fans at the newer stadium don't get into the game as much. Are there more to be seen than heard?
Well, I saw Troy say that. And first of all, attending a Dallas Cowboys game has always been a fashionable thing to do in Dallas. You know, sometimes I'm not one of these guys. Every time I see a new stadium and how palatial it is, I'm partial to the ones that get everybody in there, get them close to the field, but not necessarily. I don't judge a stadium harshly if its hallways aren't lined with mahogany paneling. It's football, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And I think it's a whole lot easier to cheer your team on to victory if you don't have to sit down your wine glass to applaud.
Awesome.
And I just will always believe that. And I think some of these have gotten so fancy that it's like sitting in your living room. I'm not sure that makes for a Lambeau-like atmosphere, or you know, and you know, you look at the new Browns Stadium. I mean, that's nothing fancy, but
right.
Extremely functional.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, and you know, the old places like Lambeau and Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. These places aren't palaces.
That's right. And nobody's setting down a wine glass; they're just spilling beer.
It was all over each other, and maybe a little mustard flew off your bratwurst because you got excited.
Dan, thank you so much, and I certainly look forward to seeing you on Sunday, my friend.
All right, Vic, we'll catch up. Thanks, pal.
He is Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.